Support for WGTD's morning show comes from the generosity of the family and friends of the late Frank and Beverly Falduto, two lifelong Kenoshans who devoted much of their lives to the community in general and to WGTD in particular. Mr. Falduto played an essential role in creating WGTD nearly 40 years ago and later served as station manager and occasional morning show co-host. And we welcome you to the Tuesday morning show on WGTD HD, Kenosha, Racine, Elkhorn, and Lake Geneva, your gateway to public radio. I'm Gregory Berg. For part one of today's program, we're going to be talking about one of my favorite plays, but it is immaterial that it happens to be one of my favorite plays. It's the favorite play of a whole lot of people. In fact, my understanding is that Almost Maine is the most often produced play in American high schools, and probably in American colleges. It's probably way up on the list as well. A very intriguing evening of nine short plays, and I have seen this play twice, first at Carthage College and then at the Racine Theater Guild, and now that opportunity presents itself again when the play Almost Maine is produced at the University of Wisconsin Parkside, and it will be opening a week from tomorrow, so Wednesday the 2nd of December. We have with us in the studio, first of all, theater professor Lisa Konetsky from the University of Wisconsin Parkside, and she has with her three Parkside students who are all members of the cast. We have Alyssa Maurer and Zach Cooper, both seniors at Parkside, and Jared Langwinski, who is a junior. And they are all going to be not only talking about Almost Maine, but also sharing a couple of excerpts from this really intriguing play. So a warm welcome to all three of you. We're glad that you can join us for the morning show today.
We're glad to be here. Thank you.
Great. Lisa, say a word, first of all, about this particular playwright and a little background on and when and where Almost Maine was written.
Almost Maine, I believe, was written in something like 2007, 2008. I may be wrong about that, but within the last 10 years, by John Cariani, who is himself an actor. And if I could hold up a picture for your viewers, you might recognize him from some TV roles that he's been in, but he's also done some acting in New York. And he came to write this play, I think, because he was looking for a vehicle that would suit him and would work for him, and that just met some ideas that he had about what was kind of missing in the American theater right now. Mm. So what I would say about Almost Maine is that the reason I think it is the most produced play in high schools and colleges, and I would say it's produced a lot in regional theaters as well, and community theaters, as you mentioned, with Racine Theater Guild, is that it's just an incredibly accessible play. It's accessible for actors, it's accessible for designers, and it's really accessible for audiences. It works on lots of different levels, so you can just go to the theater and sit and enjoy the play as a great piece of entertainment, but it also has a lot of depth to it. So I think it's just – it's something that welcomes its audience in. It doesn't ask people to have to work hard or to have to put together a lot of pieces. It's just an enjoyable evening or afternoon of theater.
Right. It intrigues me that and maybe this isn't quite true, but it surprises me that there aren't more vehicles out there like this that in a sense are built on the model of the short story. Mm-hmm. Because you think of all of the people who really – prefer consuming short stories so much more than they prefer to consume, for instance, a big, long, involved, complex novel. And yet the corollary theatrically, I mean, it's not that it doesn't exist, but it's relatively scarce, isn't it?
I think it is. And the interesting thing as you say that, I guess I hadn't really thought about this in connection to short stories, is that I love short stories. And I happen to be reading Raymond Carver short stories right now. And a lot of short stories that books that I really like are a series of short stories that you realize at the end all connect with characters in some way who know one another. So they are separate, and yet there's a connection in the community or between people. And with Almost Maine, each of these scenes, the structure of the play is that all nine scenes happen in the same town at the same time on the same night. And everyone, we hear lots of references to the characters from earlier scenes. So it's really a community of people who all in some way know one another, but they're yet nine very distinct scenes. And so it's the separateness and then the connectedness that I think it makes it work so well. And I'm not sure why there aren't more plays that function at this level. I think part of the success of this play is, as I said, that it is so accessible and it works on this level. But I think that it has it's had some scorn from the critics when it was first produced. It did not do well in the New York Times in the first production. Gave it a scathing review as sort of a Hallmark, simplistic, overly cute play. But I think it's much more than that. And it's recently been done in New York again with a very good review from the New York Times. But it would be great to have more vehicles like this, because the typical high school play is usually not anywhere near this well written or this complex. It functions both, it's accessible and it's simple, and yet it has multiple layers. You can still really dig deep into characters and relationships.
Right. One of the things I also enjoyed about it, generally speaking, I like my theater to be relatively straightforward. I don't particularly enjoy plays where I'm sort of left wondering, is this really happening, or is this all like someone's dream, or is this all representative of something else? I mean, I couldn't stand the film Forrest Gump, because again and again and again I think, wait a minute, is this really happening, or is this all in his mind or his mother's mind, or whatever?
You and I may be the only two people in the world who don't like the movie Forrest
right,
Gump.
Right, I'm speaking frankly here, but anyway, there are little tinges of that in Almost Maine. It does not feel Star to finish like an utterly realistic feet on the ground kind of series of stories, and yet that element of the not quite real somehow is there in just the right dosage, at least as far as I'm concerned. It's not off-putting or confusing, at least as far as I'm concerned.
Yeah, I think that's one of the things that's most delightful about this play. So for your listeners, every scene has some little piece of magic in it. And if you know the style of magic realism, it's, you know, things are happening and the characters just work within the convention of that magic. You know, whatever is happening, it might be unexpected, but it is, it fits within the world that they have. And I think it's delightful, these little pieces of magic. And even though we might think, well, of course, those things aren't real or that might not happen, as we watch them, they're, without being heavily symbolic, they really help us to understand what's happening in these relationships. And I think because the play is about love, you know, without getting overly sappy, you know, love is something that we talk about all the time and people sing about and people write about, but it's something that's really hard to really look at in a linear fashion and explain. And so I think some of that magic serves to help us to understand that things just happen, that some people really do fall in love at first sight, and sometimes no matter how much people love one another, relationships fail. So the magic sort of fits with the theme of the play.
We're speaking with Lisa Kornetsky, who is from the theater faculty at the University of Wisconsin Parkside, and a week from tomorrow night, so Wednesday the 2nd of December, their latest production is opening, and it's John Cariani's Almost Maine, one of the most popular and most often produced plays before the public today. And we also have three cast members with us, Zach Cooper, Alyssa Maurer, and Jared Langwinski, whom we will be hearing from in just a moment. Lisa, one of the things that perhaps makes this a especially attractive vehicle for instance, high school and college theatrical companies and community theater as well, is the fact that you have this series of short plays, and I think the understanding is, and certainly was the case with both productions I've seen, that you have a given actor portraying more than one character. So they will appear repeatedly and have, in a sense, different opportunities. And I should think that really affords some rich opportunities to these actors. It probably also makes it a little bit of a complicated challenge for you in terms of casting it and deciding who should go into what slots.
Yeah, the casting process for this was interesting because I believe there are 19 roles. And when we chose this play, we kind of left it open that depending on who auditioned and how the process worked and who was in the department, we could have people, you know, we could have anywhere from 4 people, which is what we have, as principals, or 19 people.
So the playwright has not made that very specific.
The playwright states that he's written the play for 4 characters, but he also talks, you know, in his notes about the fact that it could be more. So I don't think he's married to doing it that way. But for me, always the real challenge and opportunity for this play, and I think the actors will agree with me, is, you know, playing 4 or 5 different roles in the same play with very quick. We have character. Each of the actors goes from at least once from one scene directly into the next with a switch of character. And so that's, you know, that's challenging and it's fun because we don't want huge, you know, nobody's going off and putting on a fake mustache and, you know, changing their voice to an accent. But in subtle ways, they are changing their characters. And I think that's been fun. And they've done, we just talked about it last night, they've all done a really nice job with that. It makes it a lot of fun. And when I cast it, I knew pretty quickly that these 4 actors would all be up for that challenge. But you're right, figuring out what roles to put them in, that was the harder thing.
Right. I remember in both morning show conversations about Almost Maine, at least in one of the occasions, we ended up talking about the fact that the playwright himself is an actor. You mentioned that at the top of the interview. And how there are ways in which you can really almost tell that. I mean, that he really seems to have a sense about what kind of stuff is going to be really gratifying for actors to do. Mm-hmm. Can you just speak to that? And then we'll hear from our 3 actors as well.
Yeah, I would say he has developed, you know, he's allowed for a structure in these short scenes that allows the actors to develop a pretty fully realized character within a few pages. And I think that's really understanding not only play construction, but what an actor needs to flesh out a character. So I think he's done a really nice job with that. He also has a great sense of timing. And so there's a lot of overlapping and there's a lot of through line at the end of a line. So, you know, a lot of playwrights love to write in complete thoughts and people don't talk or think in complete thoughts. And so he does a nice job of continuing that dialogue or that intention or that thread over another person's line. I'm not sure if I'm saying that correctly, but I think from an actor's point of view and from a director's point of view, it's just very natural writing, the way that people talk. And in a modern play, I think actors want that. They want to be as real and believable as possible.
Right. As opposed to be or not to be.
Right. Which is great too, but it's another style.
Right. But there's nothing stilted about this play.
There's nothing overly poetic about it. And we have a lot of playwrights, contemporary playwrights, who are really writing in a very poetic fashion. And that's a very different style and not always as accessible for an actor.
Right. Let's hear from our 3 students who are in the room with us. Alyssa Maurer, Zach Cooper, Jared Langwinski. So what has Almost Maine been like for each of you? And what is your opinion, for instance, of John Cariani's writing? Who wants to go first?
Well, I'll start.
Here's Zach.
It's been overwhelmingly fun, these rehearsals. That's the benefit of working with a small cast, is that you put your trust in 3 people and you have your director and you can just discover things each night and not worry about if everyone's on the same page, because everyone is on the same page always.
Mm.
And that's a, a hurdle in bigger casts, is like making sure all 18, 20-odd people are making all these discoveries together. This way we're all with each other and supporting each other. And it's really quick and really fun, and we come in each night. And there's, a little something new here or there and something your fellow actor will do that really just will open up a scene all of a sudden, like something you've been working on for a month. And they'll say one thing, just a little different, and then bam. You're like, wow, this scene's here. Mm-hmm. Great.
Cool.
This is
Jared.
Oh, yeah. I would definitely say just it's created a very, like, family-esque relationship between the 4 of us, or at least I can't speak for all of us, I don't know. But like, it's very close-knit. It makes working together so much more enjoyable and fun. And just the show in general has just been a huge, like, it just has means so much to me, because not only is it like my first lead role or anything, but just the show in general, the way it's styled and the way it's performed, the blocking, like, it's completely unlike anything I've done before. And so just every time I walk into it, it's something fun, it's exciting, and we're still constantly making discoveries, you know. And it's just, there's always like something little each night that you're like, oh yeah, that was pretty cool, you know. And then as far as the playwright's concerned, I mean, like, his style, as we were saying, like, of writing is very naturalistic, very realistic. It's like something you would hear in an everyday conversation. And I think that level of realism really lets the magical moments sink in more, in a sense of like my mind is telling me this would never happen, but like, it feels like it does, you know, like in this particular moment, like, that makes sense, you know, like
it's just, own kind of sense.
Yeah. And that it makes the magic feel a little differently, like not necessarily like downplaying the magic, but like it makes the magic feel more real. And I think that's kind of the point when, you know, you try to portray magic in an artistic form.
Right. That's kind of what I was saying earlier when I said this is, to me, not like Forrest Gump. It's like there isn't too much magic, or it isn't buried in magic. There's just this magic on the edge of the picture that is really, really captivating as far as I'm concerned.
Yeah.
Alyssa, do you have anything to add about the way this play is written and what it's been like to be in it?
Well, I think one of my favorite parts is that the majority of each scene is between two characters. So the pairings between all four of us switch around, and we each get to work with each other at one point. So that's been really fun.
So everybody is paired before the night is out.
Yeah, except for the two girls. The two girls never have a scene together. But we are together in a scene for a little while where I play Sandrine and the other girl, Catherine, plays the waitress.
Yeah.
So we get to interact a little bit.
At the very, very end for a quick moment. I also want to add that we have an understudy cast for this show, and they have been a phenomenal group of people and the best understudy cast I've ever worked with. They've been really connected. I feel very confident that if, you know, God forbid, something should happen and one of our actors gets sick, the understudies would be able to jump right in, and the audience would not know that they were understudies. But we wanted to incorporate them into the show. So, you know, one of the challenges is how you do transitions from scene to scene. So the understudy cast, directed by the assistant director, handle all of the transitions of props and the little bit of furniture that we have. So they are part of the show as well, as an ensemble. And I think that's been a nice thing, too, because there isn't a huge separation between principals and the ensemble. And so we have these four actors who are tight, but we have this larger group of eight that have worked together very well.
Nice. Well, let's enjoy a couple of samples from Almost Maine. And Lisa, why don't you set up the first scene that we're going to be hearing?
Okay, so all we know at the beginning of the scene, these are the characters of Jimmy, played by Zach Cooper, and Sandrine, played by Alyssa Maurer, is that it starts with Jimmy sitting in a bar restaurant. And we'll just go from there. We're going to do about half the scene. Am I going to do the waitress? Yes, but I don't have the script in front of me, so you guys have to share. Sorry. Thank you for reminding me of that.
And so, yes. And this is from Sad and Glad.
Sad and Glad. And so the one thing that happens is that at the beginning, Jimmy is sitting at a table, and a female character walks by, and he notices her, and we start there.
Sandrine!
Huh? Jimmy!
Hey! How are you?
Doing pretty good. How are you doing?
Good. I'm good. How are you?
I'm good. Doing good.
Great. Good. That's
How
great.
Are you?
That's great. How are you?
Great.
Oh, that's great. That's great.
Yeah.
That's great.
Yeah.
That's great.
Yeah.
You look great.
Oh.
You look great. You
Thanks.
Do. You look so great. So
Thanks,
so pretty.
Jimmy.
So pretty.
Thanks.
Here, have a seat.
Oh, Jimmy, I can't. I really gotta go.
No, but I haven't seen you well in months.
Yeah.
And months and months.
Yeah.
And months and months.
Well.
Months. And how does that happen, you know? Live in the same town as someone and never see them?
I don't know.
I mean, I haven't seen you since the night before the morning when I woke up and you were just gone.
Yeah.
Look at you two tucked away in the corner over here. Lucky I found ya. Is the man and his lovely lady ready for another round?
No, well, we're not together. We're all set. Thanks.
Yeah,
all set.
Yeah.
Okay, well, holler if you need anything.
Thanks.
No, really, you gotta holler. It's busy up front.
Okay.
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 So, are you here with anyone, or...
Yeah, the girls. We're, girls' night. We're in the front. Actually, I just had to use the ladies' room, so I should really be getting back to them.
Oh, no, but I haven't seen you. They'll survive without you for a minute or two. So what's been, here. So what's up? What you been up to?
Well,
actually... Did you hear that I took over Dad's business?
Yeah, that's great.
I'm running it.
I heard that.
I'm running the business.
Heard that.
I'm running the whole show.
Congratulations. Good for you.
Shebang.
Good for you.
Thanks. Yeah, we still do heating and cooling.
Yeah?
And we've expanded, too. We do rugs now. We shampoo them.
Oh.
Yeah. It's a lot of work. A lot of work. I'm on call a lot, like weekends, holidays, you name it, because, you know, your heat goes and people die. It's serious.
Yeah.
Yeah. Like, I do Thanksgiving, Christmas, because I like to let the guys who work for me, like East helps with repairs sometimes, I let them have the day off so they can be with their families since I'm all alone this year.
Oh.
Yeah, I really don't have anybody anymore, really. My brother and sister got canned, so they left town.
Right.
Mom and Dad retired, headed south.
Yeah, I heard that.
Vermont.
Oh.
Winters there are a lot easier. And then, Spots went and died on me.
Oh, Jimmy, I didn't know that.
He was old. It was his time. He was a good fish, though. So, anyway, like I was saying, I really don't have anybody anymore, really. So I was wondering, you want to come over? It'd be fun, you know, catch up and hang out.
Oh, I really can't, Jimmy.
And I forgot to tell you, don't forget, Friday night special at the Moose Patty, drink free if you're sad. So if you're sad or if you two little lovebirds are ready for another couple of buds or something, you just let me know, all right?
No, we're fine, thanks.
Okay.
So, what do you say? You want to come over for fun?
No, Jimmy, I can't. I really can't. I really got to get back with the girls.
No.
Yeah,
no.
Jimmy, yeah, I gotta. Because, you see... Gosh, I've been meaning to tell you this for a while. There's a guy, Jimmy. I've got a guy.
Oh.
Yeah.
Well, good for you at getting yourself out there again, you know, moving on.
Yeah, well, actually, Jimmy, it's more than me just getting myself out there and moving on. This is my bachelorette party. I'm getting married.
Oh.
Yeah.
Wow.
Yeah.
Wow.
Yeah.
Wow.
Yeah.
And that's where we're going to stop.
That is wonderful stuff and good work, all of you. That's such a great example of what you were talking about earlier, the utter authenticity of this writing style, that in so many cases when we're confronted with something that's pretty astounding, we don't know what to say,
right.
And we are not particularly eloquent. And yet there's something pretty eloquent, actually, and riveting, actually, when writing is that raw and real.
Right, and I think, you know, there are a number of times where there are, in most of the scenes, where there are these awkward moments where I can think of many of them where characters don't know what exactly to say, but they kind of fumble their way through it. And then there are moments when there's a moment of complete clarity and truth that is sort of unexpected, even to the characters, that comes out. were you going
to
say?
Yeah, yeah. No, those moments of the inability to communicate are almost more human and more, they speak a lot more to the way we communicate, because I think for the most part, people never know how to communicate, especially when it comes to love. Like,
absolutely. Yeah. Well, and it's interesting how much you can convey, even when the number of words you're saying are very, very limited. I mean, all you can do is just say the same words over and over again. But yeah. Sometimes we do that.
Go ahead, Derek.
Well, I was just going to say, like, a lot of times as actors on scripts that are, like, are more complete as far as, like, sentence structure and everything goes, like, we as actors often kind of create these own, like, inner beats and just, like, spaces and gap and, like, overlapping ourselves through scripts. So, and then when you have a script like this that kind of does it for you, like, it kind of gives you a more guiding point, like, instead of you just kind of getting a feel for yourself. Like, there are a lot of moments where you do get the chance to do it with this script, but I just find it interesting, like, that compared to, you know, like, some of the fuller, as we were talking about earlier, kind of scripts that, you know, kind of have full thought, you know. And so then as actors, our natural instinct is to kind of make it more conversational, you know. So, like, when you have a script like this that does it for you, it's really interesting.
Right, when it's conversational right from the start. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, and it gives actors a wonderful chance to use their faces and bodies to communicate all the things that are the complicated things that are going on in their heads that they aren't able to communicate with words. Hmm.
So, for instance, your two characters, are you given anything in the script besides the words that you speak to give you an understanding of, I mean, like, how smart this guy is, mm-hmm. how smart this girl is, or what their history is, that backstory, or is, I mean, in a sense, is it left relatively open for you to make some of those choices?
Kiriani gives you a few things here and there to really pull from, whether it's a stage direction that will be a very characteristic stage direction about how a character reacts to a situation, mm-hmm. or you'll write something, just like a little tidbit there to give you enough flavoring to go with, and whatever context clues you pick up from the scene itself. You know, obviously this guy, Jimmy, you know, he's very desperate right now, and he's like, the fact that he's rambling on about, you know, running the business, he's got something to prove. So why does he need to prove something? And so you make all these inferences as a actor when you're reading scenes like this. And, mm-hmm. you know, there is a skeleton there, and it's, you know, for the actor really to put the flesh and the muscle onto it.
Right. What was that process like? I mean, did you just let the actors loose on that, or is this something you did a lot of talking about? Or?
We did a fair amount of talking about it, but my style as a director is to tend to try to create a framework and a structure and let the actors go and play and then respond to what they're doing. So I think they've all done a lot. I mean, these are all very good actors who do their homework, and they've really done a lot to create backstories and for their characters. And a lot of that they don't share necessarily with me. Some they do, or with each other. But for instance, in the scene that we just heard, there's a moment when, you know, what you can't see here, where he sort of forces her to sit with him at the table, even though she doesn't want to. And he asks her how she is. And then before she can even answer, he immediately goes in and talks about himself. and there are lots of reasons from his perspective why he does that or why he might do that. But we talked about, you know, what does that mean for Sandrine as a character? You know, here is this man who's desperate to have her back, and yet he doesn't really seem to want to know what's going on with her. It's all about him. And so that gives us some clues as to what their relationship might be. And then Alyssa as a character can build on that in her own way. So that's kind of the process of how we work. But I think it's nice to not have, we know a lot about the town. We know a lot about the rural quality of this northern Maine fictional place. And Kiriani gives us a lot about atmosphere and Maine and what it's like to be in a rural community, mm-hmm. but the actual backstories of these individual characters are their own to create as actors. Mm.
This style of people sort of talking over each other a bit, when we just listen to it, it sounds really easy because it is so natural. It sounds so much like the way we speak. Is it trickier, in fact, to pull off as actors than it might seem to be as for us as audience members?
Sometimes. In some scenes, you overlap more than others. And sometimes, like right now, when you take away the blocking, you kind of get tripped up in your head a little bit, which is why I brought my script with. But it was fairly easy to learn because you were learning it with the other people. So you kind of learn when you're overlapping each other and you kind of get that cemented.
Hmm.
So I think it's important to say that much of the overlapping is actually indicated in the script.
Mm-hmm.
Which is a very common thing.
And how do they do that?
Lines that show. So when I have a double line in the middle of my line, then if Zach is the next character coming in, he knows that that's when he's supposed to overlap. And then there are other sort of things that are written into the script, and that there's a little sort of chart that tells you what those mean. This play is fairly straightforward in that regard compared to last year. We did Reasons to Be Pretty, and Zach was involved in that show, which was tremendous overlapping, and that was incredibly difficult because of the way it was written, I think.
Yeah, even looking at when going in for cold readings of that play, I know actors really struggle sometimes with that slash system that playwrights use to indicate overlapping, because it's hard to follow in your script when you're reading it for the first time and then to like visualize it when you're performing it.
Right.
But yeah, Cariani has a really nice layout to almost
right.
Mean, actually.
I really liked this. I wish I could think now of the NBC television series that just got canceled a season or two ago, but they had all kinds of overlapping, like some kind of family drama.
Parenthood.
Yes! And I mean, I like that show. I mean, at its best, I thought that was a superb show. But there were many, many cases, though, where I thought that whole business of characters talking on top of each other crossed a line, and it stopped feeling authentic, and it felt more like a show trying to be authentic. Mm. And what you just did here, that felt completely real. I didn't feel like that even approached the line of being too much.
Yeah, I think that other show, without going into detail, was somewhat improvised. Mm. And so I think that was my guess watching it, that was some of what we were responding to, was hearing the actor, not the character.
Right, right. And there was a little too much effort involved.
Yeah.
So, no, this was terrific. Well done, both of you. Lisa, I know you have another scene you want to share from the play.
Yes, so this scene is called They Fell. It's the first scene. There's a little interlogue at the beginning. The play is framed with a prologue, an interlogue, and an epilogue. But this is right after the interlogue. And these are the characters of Chad and Randy. And I think all I need to say about them is that they are, it's nighttime, again, 9 o'clock at night, and they come with their beer to hang out in a potato field and hang out. So we have Jared and Zach, and I think I'll just let them go.
All right.
I believe you.
It was bad, Chad. But you're not listening, Chad. It was bad. Real bad.
Because I'm trying to tell you I had a pretty bad time myself.
No, there's no way.
It was pretty bad, Randy.
Really?
Yeah.
Okay. Go.
She, she told me she didn't like the way I smelled.
What?
Sally told me she didn't like the way I smelled. Never had.
Sally Dunlovey told you that she didn't when
I picked her up. I got there, she got into the truck, we started backing out of the driveway, and all of a sudden, she starts breathing real heavy and asked me to stop. And she got out of the truck and said she was sorry, but she couldn't go out with me because she didn't like the way I smelled. Never had.
What?
She said she thought she was going to be able to overlook it, the way I smelled, but apparently that wasn't going to be possible after all. And then she slammed the door and left me sitting right there in her driveway.
Because she didn't like the way you smell.
Yeah.
Well, what kind of... I don't mind the way you smell.
Thanks.
Jeez.
Yeah. Told you it was bad.
More than bad, Chad. That's sad. Mm.
So, I guess I'm the winner, which means I get to pick tomorrow. And I pick Bolin. We'll go Bolin. Supper at the snowmobile club, couple of beers at the moose patty, and just hang out.
I didn't say you were the big winner.
What?
Did I say you were the big winner?
No.
No, all that's pretty sad, Chad, and bad, but you didn't win.
You can beat being told you smell bad.
Yeah?
Well?
Mine's face broke.
What?
Her face broke.
Her?
Only get one chance with a girl like Yvonne LaFrance... And her face broke. I told you it was bad.
How did her face break?
Well, when we were dancing.
Dancing?
Yeah.
Well, why were you dancing?
Well, because that's what she wanted to do on our date. So I took her. Took her dancing down the rec center. You pay, and then you get a lesson, and then you dance all night. They teach together dancing, how to dance together. And we learned that thing where you throw the girl up and over. And Yvonne, well, you know, she's pretty small, mm-hmm. and I'm stronger than I look. And well, I threw her up and over, and well, I threw her over. Over.
Oh.
And she landed on her face, and it broke. Had to take her to the emergency room.
That's a drive.
38 miles.
Yep.
And she cried.
I hate that.
Whole way. And then asked me to call her old boyfriend to come get her. He did. He asked me to please leave. You know, he's about as small as she is. What?
That's pretty bad.
Yep.
And sad.
Yep.
That right there might make you the big winner of all time.
Yep.
Baddest date guy of all time.
Yep.
Congratulations.
Thank you.
So, what do you pick for tomorrow?
Bowling. Supper at the Snowmobile Club. Couple beers at the Moose Patty. Hang out.
Good.
What?
I don't know. It's just, I don't know why I bother going out. I don't like it, Randy. I hate it. I hate going out on these dates. I mean, why do I want to spend my Friday night with some girl I might maybe like, when I could spend it with somebody I know I like you, you know?
Yeah.
And I mean, tonight was rough. In the middle of Sally telling me how she didn't like the way I smelled, I got real sad.
Aw, buddy.
And all I could think about was how not much in this world makes me feel good or makes much sense to me anymore. And I got scared because, you know, something's got to make you feel good or at least make sense or what's the point? But
yeah.
Then I kind of came out of being scared and I felt okay. Because I realized there is one thing in this world that makes me feel real good and that does make sense to me. And that's you, Randy.
And that's where we're going to end that scene.
Mm. Right on the cliffhanger.
No kidding. Wow. Now, I read someplace that that a production of this was canceled because of this particular moment in the play. Have you heard anything about that?
Yes. well, and I can imagine, you know, a high school in particular. You know, I'll be careful what I say here, but I think, you know, theater is, you know, trying to open us up to lots of different experiences.
Of course.
And I would call this a PG-13 play, but I think there are some things that a high school might be nervous about in almost any play.
Of course.
And, this was one of them, the scene right. between the two men.
Yeah. No, it's so beautifully written and so real.
Yeah, very real.
Absolutely. So tell us, guys, what sort of the backstory that you created about these two intriguing characters.
Well, what is it? The script says, I'm going to mispronounce the county.
Aroostook.
Yeah, these are two Aroostook County boys. So these are like, you know, the guys of the town, and they've been going to their potato field for, you know, since high school or however long they've been friends, and they just sit there and crush a few beers, and they've kind of developed this game that, you know, the bad and sad game, where it's like we try to one-up each other with, like, how bad our date stories are mm-hmm. or interactions with women. And this is their ritual, though.
Yeah.
I think they're kind of – they're always grouped when they're referenced by any other character. They're always grouped as Randy and Chad.
Yeah.
You know, like, they're already a couple in the way that they're, you know, best friends.
Mm-hmm.
I don't – Jared?
Yeah, no, it like, one thing I find really interesting about most of the characters in this show is that I get the feeling that they've lived in almost their entire lives, you know, and so everything, like, at times it can seem kind of, you know, like, in like, just repetitive, but like not in a way that these characters do not enjoy. Like they don't want to leave. You know what I mean? A lot of these characters, and I feel like Chad and Randy are two guys who they're really good at their job. You know, they love what they do. They love finding their little spot out. You know, just themselves and just, you know, let the vent. You know what I mean? Like it's a very natural relationship between the two. You know, mm-hmm. even as friends, that it's something very relatable to audiences. And then things, you know, get a little bit different towards the end of the scene that are also really interesting that we kind of have a little bit of like insight on as far as why they kind of reach that point in their friendship.
Yeah, Kiriani, I think in each scene demonstrates a different way love is found or love is lost.
Mm-hmm.
And this one in particular is a very, I think, true sense of finding love is like realizing you're in love with someone that you've been with for so long and never really thought of them as necessarily a romantic partner, but then you all of a sudden have a realization that, like, wait, you're my person. Mm-hmm. Like, this makes sense now.
You're my soulmate.
Yeah,
I mean,
right.
And you've been here all along, but I never thought of you that way.
Yeah.
You know, I have to say, I love what he does by taking this very small town, this rural community, which is so much a part of the play, and not in any way challenging why people are there. People just are there, and they're happy there. They may not be happy in their relationships, but that community is part of it. And then he just lets us see all of the kinds of permutations of love, you know, how love is found, as you said, how love is lost, how people discover something in someone that they hadn't seen before. It's just really a wonderful kind of romantic comedy with some very serious scenes, I have to say, about all of the complexities of love. And then sometimes love is just so simple. It's right in front of us.
Right.
Yeah, like I was going to say, like the play, the opening, the prologue, it's right away, one of the first lines is, I love you. The very first time that a character says, I love you to someone is one of the first lines in the whole show. And so I really feel like that sets the tone for the show of just like the sudden impulses and gut reactions to things of just, you know, like in the moment you've just had this, you know, realization.
I'm trying to remember now from what you described at the beginning. Do we see any characters more than once, or is every character's appearance a one and only appearance?
Well, we see the characters who are in the prologue, the interlogue, and the epilogue are the same characters. So there's one scene that frames the play. And, you know, if we were to put those together, those three scenes, it would be one scene, if that makes
mm-hmm.
sense.
Mm-hmm.
So that frames it. But otherwise, we don't see characters again.
So Sandrine doesn't come back.
We hear her name mentioned by another character.
Okay.
So there are a couple of times where, you know, one of the things that actors always learn is that you learn who your character is not only by what your character says, but what other people say about you. And there's some really nice referencing of other characters that get brought in, you know, when people are talking about their relationship. Well, Sandrine says. So that's just a nice little contrivance that Kiriani has.
Yeah, I was going to say there's a reference that my character Lendl makes to Marvelyn, who you find out in the scene right before is someone who's having problems with their boyfriend. And so Gail, who Lendl's with in the show, like makes a reference to like, oh, well, Marvelyn said this. And he's like, oh, Marvelyn, like she's an expert on relations. You know what I mean? Like, there's very like subtle like things that we kind of like throw in to each other, like within the script that are just like very, very, very like honest, like kind of descriptions. Like if you were just still having any day conversation, you know, you'd be like, oh, well, what about, you know, like, and so it's very realistic, the text.
Right. Yeah. Oh, yeah. Oh, he's a jerk. Or he's
yeah.
a good, I mean, to the way they
yeah.
And bit by bit, rather full portraits get painted then of these characters.
Right. And some of the fun of that, too, just and it may be something that the audience doesn't pick up as much as we do, is that in, you know, he Jared in his scene playing Lendl says that about Marvelyn. And he was just in the scene playing against, you know, or with Marvelyn
yeah.
as an actor.
As Steve,
so, or
yeah.
Steve as another character. So that's some of the fun in the play. You know, it's fun. And I think you know, one of the things that the playwright talks about is not making the play be too cute, because I think, you know, I can imagine that particularly a high school production might go for that surface. But I think we've worked really hard to find the real moments. You know, there are some very sweet moments, but there are also some moments that are pretty painful in the play. And that's the way love is, right?
Mm-hmm. Absolutely. Well, I have to say, again, I've seen this play twice. I loved it both times so much, and I'm excited for the opportunity to see it again, and especially after hearing the good work of these terrific actors.
Yeah. And we have one, Catherine, who is Kleinhoffen, who's not here today, is the fourth actor, and she is also a wonderful part of the cast, so I don't want to leave her out there.
Right. Just say a quick word, Lisa, about what this play is going to look like visually. I mean, your production.
It is stunning, I have to say. It is stunning. It's a unit set that's very flexible. So it's in a sort of tennis court style with audience on two sides. We have a beautiful drop of a winter scene.
Yeah.
We have northern lights, which are part of the magic. We have a student lighting designer, Robin Feldman, who's doing an excellent job. Taylor Varney, who is the student costume designer, is doing a terrific job. And I think it's going to be... Visually, it's magical, I think. It's really lovely. But it's not a complicated set, but Jody Sikas, our faculty scenic designer, has done a really great job to create a space that's really been flexible for me to work with the actors on. So I think people will find it really interesting visually. It's almost like being in the round.
Hmm.
So one of the things I found as a director is that every time I sit in a different seat, I see very different things. So, you know, audiences will sort of need to be aware that there are times when backs are to them, but that doesn't last for very long. And it makes it, I think, much more interesting than, having the actors all facing from a proscenium stage.
Sure. So when is this being performed and exactly where?
Okay, so it's in the Rita at UW Parkside in our Black Box Theater. It opens Wednesday, December 2nd, and just runs one weekend, just sort of due to the holidays. So it's December 2nd through 6th. That'll be a Wednesday, Thursday, Friday, and Saturday night at 7:30. There's a Friday the 4th. There's a matinee at 10, and it closes on the 6th, Sunday, with a 2 p.m. matinee.
Very good. Almost Maine at the University of Wisconsin Parkside. Lisa Konecki is the director of this production, and three of the four actors with us as well, Alyssa Maurer, Zach Cooper, and Jared Langwinski. Great to have all three of you here, and very, very best wishes with this production and all that stretches ahead for you.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Great to have you here. Tomorrow on The Morning Show, Janice Kaplan, the author of an intriguing book called The Gratitude Diaries. And on the eve of Thanksgiving, it will be a good conversation about the importance of gratitude in our lives. And then there'll be no morning show on Thursday or Friday because of the Thanksgiving holiday. But we'll be back, of course, next week with a full slate of programs. And you can find the morning show archive at our website, WGTD.org. Support for WGTD's morning show comes from the generosity of the family and friends of the late Frank and Beverly Falduto, two lifelong Kenosians who devoted much of their lives to the community in general and to WGTD in particular. Mr. Falduto played an essential role in creating WGTD nearly 40 years ago and later served as station manager and occasional morning show co-host. Let's look at our weather forecast from the National Weather Service for southeastern Wisconsin and northeastern Illinois. Today is going to be a partly sunny day. We'll have a high temperature of 38 degrees in Kenosha and Racine, not quite as warm, 35 degrees the high out west in Walworth County. It will be partly cloudy and not as cold tonight, and our temperatures will pretty much hold steady in the mid-30s. And tomorrow, under partly sunny skies, we're going to warm to a high of 45 degrees. For Thursday, Thanksgiving Day, there are going to be periods of rain. In fact, there may even be some downpours Thursday afternoon. It's also potentially a foggy Thanksgiving Day, and we're going to warm on Thursday to a high of 52 degrees. This is WGTD HD.